Welcome to Virtual Economy, a podcast about the business of games for the rest of us. We're your hosts. I'm Amanda Farrow.
And I'm Michael Footer.
Each episode, we'll cover the biggest business beats and bring in expert commentary from lawyers, analysts, and industry pros. This is episode 69. How nice are the earnings? Pretty nice.
I'm really happy that we're here. We made it all the way to episode 69. We're going to find out how these financials all fit together.
Oh, no.
That's right. I feel it's like business for children.
I feel like every time one of us goes to say the episode name, like the episode title, one of us or both of us just crack up. It's because true. Your episode titles are always brilliant.
That's right.
Oh my goodness.
Well, you see, when a man and a woman love each other very much, they make financial earnings.
They talk about financial earnings together.
See what I did there?
Because we're... Okay, anyway, that's not important. You know what is important, though? Earnings!
Earnings!
We have a full episode of financials today.
We do, and the timing of all this probably means that this will be the big earnings call.
Yes.
Or the big earnings show, and next week will be a smaller earnings show.
The big earnings show.
Yeah.
All right, so we have a number of different big financial earnings to go over, and we're going to start with Square Enix.
Sure, and we're going to move through things pretty quickly. Some of this has some heavier analysis, some of this has some lighter analysis.
Really depends on what the numbers are saying.
It does. And what you're going to hear throughout, just to give you a little spoiler, is everything we've been talking about for a while, which is the game industry has done relatively well with everybody trapped at home.
Pretty nice.
Pretty nice. So, Square Enix, reporting for the 9 months ending on December 31st. Remember, their fiscal year ends on March 31st. Net sales are up 33.7% to 253.6 billion yen. That's $2.4 billion U.S., operating income up 40.7% to 41 billion yen, 389.3 million US dollars. Profit was down a little bit.
Interesting. Why do you think that is?
We'll talk about that in a second. So it was down 3.8% to 18.3 billion yen. That's $173.8 million.
Mm-hmm.
Now remember, Square Enix, like a number of Japanese companies, breaks things down. They have multiple business units.
Yeah, so of course.
Video games are not their only business unit.
I think the only one that really doesn't have a significant amount of revenue from, quote, other is Nintendo.
Yeah, you're right. They originally were going to branch out into that lifestyle, quality of life stuff that never emerged. And
yeah, we'll get there. We're going to talk about Nintendo in a bit. But
sure.
Yeah.
Yes. So Square Enix, their digital entertainment, which is their video games division, was up 48.6%.
Of course.
Publication was up 45.7% for the
manga,
first 9 months.
Manga.
Yeah, people want their manga in quarantine.
They do.
Merchandising was also up 7.7%, and that includes new releases like the Final Fantasy VII remake soundtrack, and also that really, really expensive Nier Automata 2B figure, which is beautiful.
It was so pretty. Mm. So people want their manga, they want their video games, and they want their really pretty statuettes.
Yes. What people don't want, because, you know, they don't want to get sick, is amusement type stuff. So,
right.
Yeah, that's pachinko and patchy slot and arcades and all of that stuff. That was down 27.7%, and we can attribute that directly to COVID.
Yeah, absolutely.
So digital entertainment, though, so just to give you an understanding of where the weight is in Square Enix's financials, 80% of their revenue is from digital entertainment. On the HD games, remember, HD games are split up into HD, which is your console and PC titles. You've got MMOs, which are your subscription games, which is Dragon Quest X and Final Fantasy XIV, with a little smidge of Final Fantasy XI in there.
Is it really still registering revenue all these years
later?
They don't talk about it. I mean, it's still live.
You can still play that game.
Why would you want to? When the superior experience is Final Fantasy XIV, I'm so confused.
And then there's mobile.
Yeah, they do make some money from their mobile games. There's a lot of gacha mechanics in those.
So. There are. So there's Dissidia. There's like three active Final Fantasy games right now, I think.
Or more.
There's the Kingdom Hearts game.
Yeah, there's a lot going on there.
So for HD, full game sales are up 16% worldwide for the first 9 months of the year, but operating income is still showing a loss in Q3.
Okay.
So in Q2, the loss was 6 billion yen. And then in Q3, it was 4 billion yen. But it's still up because at the beginning of the fiscal year was Final Fantasy VII Remake.
Right, yeah.
So what do we take away from this, right? Mm-hmm. Now, they said that Final Fantasy VII and Avengers drove HD performance. Mm-hmm. I assume that Avengers is starting to recover, but there are some challenges with the way that game has been handled post-launch. I think the slowness of releasing the PlayStation 5 and Xbox Series version, I think the slower release cadence for follow-up heroes. Remember, we got Kate. I think the Clint Barton Hawkeye stuff is being revealed in February and then coming out after that at some point.
I'm not certain what that schedule looks like. All I know is that that game does not want me to play it because it crashes whenever the four of us sit down to play the game.
We've had some problems, and that's an issue when you can't get people into a game quickly. Time to game is a big issue, and we've spent an excessive amount of time trying to start up a session only to
45 minutes, I think, is our new record of trying to get in to play the Avengers together, Marvel's Avengers together.
It's not great.
It is not great.
So operating income is a positive 2.5 billion yen. So even with those losses. Now, if in Q4 those losses mount. Mm-hmm. Now remember, operating income is a measure of activity, of activity directly related to. So if they've got a lot of R&D stuff going on,
yeah,
that could also tip the scales to higher expense, lower revenue.
Exactly.
And that's why it's important when we talk about it. Okay, yeah, we're going to break down HD, but we have to look at their entire division, their entire digital division.
Totally.
Because there's other things that lift that up. And it's cyclical, right? You mm-hmm. have those expenses that come in that are offset by one branch of the division. Mm-hmm. Then that pays off. You have revenue that starts to pick up.
Yeah, absolutely. We should talk a little bit about what's going on with Final Fantasy 14 and Dragon Quest 10, though.
We should, absolutely. So those are still doing really well. The sales have declined a bit because we're looking at a year ago when there were new expansions.
However, Final Fantasy 14 just announced, like the team at Final Fantasy 14 just announced a new expansion.
Endwalker. And what we're seeing anecdotally at this point that I think will be borne out by Q4 MMO numbers is the interest in Final Fantasy has spiked. Final Fantasy 14 has spiked because of that reveal.
Yeah.
So we're probably going to see some lift happen. Now, this happens with WoW also.
Oh, yeah, all the time.
Every time there's a new expansion or new content that announced, it draws people back in advance. They're not waiting for that new expansion.
Yeah, absolutely, because they want to get caught up on content and stuff like that. And it's not just relegated to MMOs either. We saw that with Hearthstone for a long time as well. We'll see that in games that have been around for a long time and they have a long tail and, you know, they're constantly being updated. Mm-hmm. And whenever there are new updates, we're going to see more people interested in it.
Absolutely.
MMOs like Final Fantasy 14 and World of Warcraft, those tend to see the biggest lifts just at announce and just before and after release.
Right. Now, the important thing to note with the MMO stuff is that sales were down because those expansions were a year ago.
Yeah.
But operating income was up on the back of recurrent revenue. So that's subscriptions, and that is, especially with Final Fantasy 14, there are some mounts, if you want to buy them account-wide instead of character-wide, they're $30.
Yeah.
A single mount.
It's a lot of money. I don't know. I don't understand. But it's okay. It's all right.
Yep.
So, yeah, Final Fantasy 14 is still doing relatively well with regards to that recurrent revenue.
Mm-hmm.
Sweet.
Absolutely.
Love to see it.
And finally, on the gaming side, mobile net sales and operating income both rose. Again, that's a factor of people are at home. Everybody's got a phone. People are playing those games. So, you know, we'll see. I'm very interested to see what happens with HD game operating income in Q4. I expect they're going to show a loss. But remember, there's a lot of projects that are in the hopper right now.
That's true.
Although Nier Replicant comes out in... Wait. If that comes out this fiscal year, it'll help. I'm looking it up right now. Nier Replicant.
And just like Mike said, I mean, we're taking a look at, like, if they are in the midst of research and development with a number of different titles, that's definitely going to eat up operating income.
Absolutely. So Nier Replicant comes out in April of this year.
So
my guess is what's going to happen is we are going to see another operating loss that hits in Q4, and that may actually drag operating income into the negative for the full year for HD games. But then we're going to start to see it lift with Nier Replicant. After the performance and adoration that people had for Nier Automata, I think Nier Replicant is going to kick off the fiscal year in a very strong way.
I would tend to agree.
All right, on to Activision.
So we are taking a look at Q4 and full year for 2020.
Activision's weird. They have a fiscal year that mirrors the calendar year.
Yes, they do. So Q4 net revenue was $2.4 billion, and that was against an outlook of $2 billion. Mm-hmm. And the 2019 results of, like, just under $2 billion. So, I mean, like, everything rose, which is really great. For the entire fiscal year of 2020, Activision brought in $8.09 billion versus $6.489 in 2019.
It's a huge jump.
It's a huge jump. Absolutely. I would imagine that the big players in that are going to be Call of Duty and World of Warcraft.
And we will certainly talk about that. Now, the outlook for next year, they're expecting not just to hold post-pandemic, because by this point, we assume that through 2021, some of the year is going to be hopefully post-pandemic. But they're expecting it to be nice. $8.23 billion, which is interesting for a couple of reasons we'll talk about. And so, then the digital stuff is really
interesting. Yeah, the digital stuff, and we're seeing this all across the board, is that digital got an enormous lift in 2020, in fiscal 21 for a bunch of these companies that identify as such. Digital net revenue at Activision was up.
I thought you'd like this.
$6.66 billion was $6.66 billion up. What was it? 82.3% of total net revenue. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, that's really impressive. I'm sorry. I can't get over the
6.66. The number of the codec.
it's perfect. I love it. All right, let's talk about Activision Publishing. Mike, lead us through these numbers.
Sure. So Modern Warfare set a record for second year sales. Now, what that means is, obviously, Call of Duty comes out every year. First year sales are going to be, you know, the...
huge.
Well, right. And it's going to be like November, December.
Sure.
Right? So for a game's second year, so this would be this fiscal year, or the most recently completed fiscal year, that would be second year. So sure. Modern Warfare set a record for Call of Duty.
Okay.
For second year.
Good sales. For them.
It also set other records in 2020. More than 100 million monthly active users. Ooh. And they doubled net bookings for Call of Duty.
That's impressive.
Full year Call of Duty sales were up 40% year over year, with COVID driving a major shift to digital, which we talked about when we looked at the overall.
Yeah, absolutely.
In Q4, Activision had 128 million monthly active users. That's up from Q3, which was 111 million MAUs. Quarter two had 125 million MAUs.
Which is where when we were all firmly sheltering in place pretty much across the country.
And then Q1 had 102 million. So what we're seeing then is they had a very strong holiday quarter.
They did, absolutely.
We talked about net bookings being up double digits year over year for Call of Duty. And in Q4, Call of Duty in-game net bookings, so that is additional purchases.
Yeah.
So that would be cosmetics and additional operators, I assume.
MTX.
Yep. Those net bookings grew across PC and console.
Okay.
50% year over year.
All right.
And the first season of Black Ops Cold War Warzone content has seen the highest number of Battle Pass redemptions.
That's great.
It is, yeah.
Love to see the move to Battle Pass.
And on the mobile side, Call of Duty Mobile had a record quarter, double-digit growth in net bookings year over year. In Q4, it had the highest number of Western players for Call of Duty Mobile, and average spend per player increased significantly. So Call of Duty continues. There was some worry that Call of Duty Mobile wasn't going to be very significant in the West. It's very much a title that felt tailored to Asian territories.
Sure.
So it's very interesting to see that Western players have really become attracted to it.
Not everybody wants a console.
That's true.
And not everybody wants a PC, which is totally fine. Let's talk about Blizzard. All right, World of Warcraft net bookings are up 40% for the full year in 2020, which is fabulous. Good for them. I would imagine that has a little something to do with their most recent expansion that came out in November. WoW Shadowlands. Their World of Warcraft's MAUs, so monthly active users, is up year over year and for the sixth consecutive quarter. So Blizzard's monthly active users hit 29 million players in Q4. So just taking a look at how things worked over the course of the year, they've remained fairly steady, which, you know, that's laudable considering how old World of Warcraft is and Blizzard's, you know, approach to their online content at all. So in Q1, they were sitting at 32 million MAUs, Q2, 32 million, Q3, 30 million, and then they were at 29 million in Q4.
Yeah, so dipped a little bit in the holiday season. Now, again, I think you mentioned, you're right. I think that the Shadowlands timing kind of spiked it. earlier in the year, and now it's kind of tapering off, but it's not tapering off a lot.
No, it's definitely not tapering off a lot. I would imagine that this is going to be something that people will be interested in continuing with, but it's just one of those things. MMOs are fickle. As someone who has played MMOs since she was 15 years old, this is like, oh my god, that's 20 years I've been playing MMOs. Oh no! Oh, I just crumbled into dust internally. Okay, let's talk about Shadowlands so I can stop crumbling. Shadowlands drove strong increases for subscriber growth and net bookings in Q4 for Blizzard. It has also driven higher engagement trends. I don't know really what that means for
World of Warcraft. That they're just looking about how, if I had to guess.
Because they weren't explicit about it. It's a combination
of amount of hours played.
Okay.
And with MAUs and DAUs and things like that.
Okay. If that's how they're measuring engagement, then sure. That makes sense. So Shadowlands has also driven higher engagement trends compared to previous expansions, which I would imagine is due in part to COVID.
More time.
Yeah.
People don't have to commute, which means that a couple hours in their day not spent in a car.
Totally understand that. So the MAUs, however, being a little bit depressed in comparison to Q1 and Q2, I don't think that really has too much to do with Shadowlands. I think that that has more to do with the fact that new consoles came out.
Sure.
And people were paying attention to other things, which is perfectly reasonable. All right, so Shadowlands life to date is higher than any World of Warcraft expansion in the last decade, which is saying something. Yes.
I think the content, what we've seen about the content, people seem very happy with it, on top of the fact that people got some time on their hands.
Yeah, I mean, that's fair. But overall, the reviews that I saw coming out about Shadowlands, especially anecdotally, has been really, really strong. Diablo Immortal will see additional public testing as it heads to launch later this year. And BlizzCon Line will be happening on February 19th and 20th.
Yes, so that's just in a couple of weeks here.
Yep, that's just in a couple of weeks. All right, Mike, take us through King.
All right, so King, those Candy Crush folks, for their full year, it was the best financial performance seen since Activision acquired the mobile company.
Woo, good for them.
Their in-game net bookings grew double-digit percentages year over year in Q4. Not surprising. Their Q4 MAUs were 240 million, showing a steady decline throughout 2020. So it went
But King's games are very much so fodder for commutes and for being in the office, and you're like, I've got 10 minutes.
Minutes. I need to go run to the restroom and play some Candy Crush.
Yeah, that. I don't know.
So in Q1, the MAUs were 273 million, then down to 271 in Q2, 249 in Q3. And then once we got into the holiday quarter, 240 million. Mm-hmm. But Candy Crush was the top growing franchise in the US app stores.
That's great.
Or top grossing franchise in the U.S. App Store. Sorry, that's a typo on my part.
That's okay.
Advertising. Now, you and I talked about this early in the pandemic, Advertising was up year over year. So it grew year over year. Net bookings from brand advertisers and partner networks grew sharply year over year. And full year net bookings grew almost 50% year over year. So while everybody else was talking about depressed advertising, Candy Crush and King Games have done really well.
That's advertising across the board, quite frankly. From the biggest brands, we're talking from King and from Zynga specifically, we're seeing really big numbers. So it was King, it was Zynga, and Scopely.
Okay.
They were all reporting that their advertising, and Kabam was another one of them. So like the big players in the mobile space all saw a lift in advertising this year. I don't know if they saw a 50% lift, but they certainly saw a lift of some kind.
Mm-hmm. Now, there was some additional color given in the earnings call itself, and there were questions that were asked and answered, and we had some interesting information pop up.
So, there was that rumor that there was a Diablo 2 remake in the works with Vicarious Visions playing a role, and now that they've been, I don't know, fully cannibalized, I suppose, by Activision Blizzard, it'll be interesting to see if that was something that they were working on or not. I would love to see a D2 remake.
Yeah, absolutely.
It is an exceptional game with an exceptional story, and I lost many hours playing that game in addition to sneaking it in the back of my COBOL classes when I was in university. So,
having a Diablo 2 remake, especially if it does hit in fiscal 2021, would be important because we also learned on the call, Diablo 4 will not be coming out this year, nor will Overwatch 2.
Nor will Overwatch 2. So that's
two huge Blizzard games that were bumped to 2022 at the earliest.
And that's the earliest. So we will have to see if the closer,
Rod Ferguson,
we'll be able to deliver the game in 2022. I don't have a ton of hope for that. I have a feeling that both of these games ended up getting really off track. And with all of the, you know, layoff shuffle that happened at Activision Blizzard a couple of years ago. So I would imagine that that has deeply affected things.
Mm-hmm. I'm going to blow everybody's mind right now.
Okay. You
ready?
Do it.
There's a new Call of Duty coming this year.
What?
I know. Womp womp. The other interesting thing that popped up on the call, though, was Activision, they're not the only ones who are doing this, but Activision has had a share repurchase plan in the works for a while.
Yeah.
It's a multi-year plan.
It's been going on since 2019, I believe.
I think you're right. So when companies repurchase shares, it's a signal to investors that they're investing in the company, they believe in the company, they are reducing the dilution of shares, so every share then becomes a larger piece of the company when the company repurchases.
And therefore becomes more valuable.
Absolutely. So they're increasing their plan from $1.5 billion to $4 billion of share repurchasing.
Wow.
It's pretty big.
That's some big confidence considering they don't have much going on right now.
Absolutely. So that about wraps up for Activision Blizzard. It's very interesting.
It's kind of a bleak year for Blizzard. And I mean, Activision Publishing has Call of Duty, which will do gangbusters again. It does every single year. It breaks records, it feels like. So Activision Blizzard will be just fine. And King continues to be extremely mm-hmm. steady and profitable. So even if Blizzard is not making it happen, what are you going to do?
Yeah.
All right, let's talk about Sony's earnings.
Okay, we're not going to cover, as we don't typically cover Microsoft as a whole, we don't cover Sony as a whole. We just focus in on their gaming divisions. So
absolutely. The only time that we really take a look at Microsoft's earnings as a whole is if we're taking a look at things like cloud and we're taking a look at things like Azure, because all of that plays in with gaming. However, Sony doesn't have that kind of technology that they report on. So
I mean, there's PlayStation Now, but I think Sony's even forgotten about PlayStation Now.
What's PlayStation Now?
Exactly.
I feel like it was PlayStation then. That's good, right?
That's real good.
Yeah. Sometimes sad, I'm smart.
But it's good.
Yeah, it's sad,
you're
but good.
You're always smart. Don't sell yourself short.
I don't know about that. Anyway, let's continue. So let's talk about Sony's earnings. So sales were up 251.1 billion yen, which translates to $2.39 billion US. Operating income was up as well, 47.5 billion yen, which again is $452.4 million US. There was an increase in software and add-on content, of course. They talked about the PlayStation 5 launch. There was an increase in PlayStation Plus subscriptions, which is again not surprising given that PlayStation Plus on the PlayStation 5 is just chef's kiss.
Well, it's been solid. And again, if you didn't have a PlayStation 4 and you're just kind of re-entering the ecosystem, PlayStation Plus on PS5 gets you that library of PS4
exactly.
games, including God of War, which just got that update. It's got Horizon. It's got so many games.
I missed out on so many of these games on the PlayStation 4 because I was so busy and didn't have any time. So I am very eyeballing.
You must play God of War, especially now with the update.
I am very eyeballing God of War. So yes, I am all in. Mike, what else have we got here?
Let's see. PlayStation 4 sales were higher and profit margins have increased over the generation. So
of course
that's obvious. Remember, when a console comes out, it is often sold at a break even or at a loss. And what happens is, as the technology in those consoles gets a little bit older, the costs go down. So every unit sold later in a console's life cycle is higher margin. And as we have talked about, sorry, you were probably going to say, go on.
No, it's okay.
All right. As we've talked about, 2020 was an abnormal end of cycle year. So we saw hardware sales for old gen, last gen consoles go up when normally they would start to really taper off in that year.
Absolutely. That is in fact what I was going to say. So they, unfortunately, or rather not unfortunately, this is just, you know, the cost of doing business. There were higher expenses due to the PlayStation 5 launch that haven't yet been returned. And so, like Mike just finished saying, the PlayStation 5 is being sold at a loss.
So it's really important for us to talk about this. Remember, we expected this.
Yeah.
This is not a surprise.
No.
Nintendo is probably the only company that is adamant and has a pillar around do not sell hardware at a loss.
But it's also different with Nintendo because they are, I don't know, Nintendo gonna do what Nintendo gonna do.
It's so true.
They don't pay attention to what everyone else is doing, and they don't follow the same, they don't seem to follow the same logic. Even if they're not trying to be weird and other, they just end up being like that because of their first party software. Mm-hmm. The first party software is what continues to make. And we'll talk about
that. We're going to talk about that.
We'll get there. But that's why Nintendo is completely different.
So remember, if you're new to listening to the show, we've talked about hardware costs before at start of cycle. Hardware is what we call a loss leader. Now, what that means is you're selling hardware at a loss.
Yeah.
Typically. It's not often a huge loss. Although this generation, we don't know exactly how much
we have no idea.
But we expect that the Xbox Series X, especially, maybe not the Series S, but the Series X and the PlayStation 5.
Excuse me, what's the Series S?
The extra small, small.
There we go. Yes.
The Series X and the PS5, not the extra small, small, being sold at a cost less than it takes to manufacture. Now, the reason why you do that is because you get those installed into homes.
Install base.
Exactly.
You want that install base.
And then you make that up on software licensing or the 30% you're taking from digital sales, et cetera, et cetera. So your margins are significantly better on software. So you make that up because if you charged what the hardware cost to make, it would become prohibitive and you would sell less units, which means you would sell fewer software units.
So, and the reason why it's so important for us to look at this with this particular generation, and then going back before the Xbox One and the PlayStation 4, so looking at the PlayStation 3 and the Xbox 360, everybody remembers how utterly, damningly expensive the PlayStation 3 was. And we're taking a look at the PlayStation 5, and even though the PlayStation 5 is not damningly expensive, it's still very expensive.
Absolutely.
So if they had charged the full amount of what it would have been to cost to break even, I would imagine that no one would be able to afford that, or very few people would be able to afford that. Mm-hmm. And on the flip side, it could mean that the channel would have more, but who would buy them? Sure. We're in the middle of a global pandemic here, people.
There is a philosophy that the $499 price is kind of your ceiling before people start to get very price sensitive.
Yeah, absolutely. It is. And I mean, yeah, people are going to be going out and purchasing phones or whatever, but they're also on contracts a lot of the time, and they're able to trade in and they're able to pay monthly. Mm-hmm. And it's not, I mean, getting an Xbox Series X with the All Access? I mean, that was really challenging. That was really difficult. Sure. And PlayStation doesn't offer anything similar currently.
No, they don't.
So anyway, let's talk a little bit about what happened with the PlayStation 5 launch. Mm-hmm. So PlayStation 5 has sold 4.5 million units worldwide, and the target through the end of fiscal year, which, reminder, is March 31st, is 7.6 million units.
Yes.
So it'll be interesting to see, like, how they are going to get those units in and through the channels.
It's really interesting because, now perhaps it's just because of who I follow online, I have seen that Sony has had multiple times per week queues for its own distribution, its first-party distribution.
We're not seeing that with Xbox.
No, but it has been popping up. It's just it doesn't have that system of, oh, there's a queue, go line up digitally on the PlayStation site and
that's
see what
That's so strange, lining up digitally.
But it works.
I know. Works. It totally, totally works. But my brain is broken because I keep thinking about physical cues and digital cues.
It also prevents botting.
Yeah, and that, as we have spoken about in, oh my goodness, back in September, I believe, mm-hmm. The abundance of bots making everybody's lives really challenging.
Mm-hmm. And remember, PlayStation 5 was the largest console launch in history.
It was, absolutely. It was incredible. All right, so let's continue. So 85% of PlayStation 5 users, haha, here's the real money, mm-hmm. have PlayStation Plus subscriptions.
Yes.
That makes really good sense. It's a great value if you have a PlayStation 5, just in case you missed things on the PlayStation 4. Mm-hmm. Or if you're like me, you were so blindingly busy that you forgot years were years.
Yes. we'll remind you about years soon.
God of War. Okay, but I got to play Miles Morales first. So why don't we talk about Miles Morales?
Well, so just real quick, gameplay time overall for PlayStation consoles was up 30% year over year in December.
Oh, that's great.
Yes.
But let's talk about Miles.
Okay. Miles Morales has moved 4.1 million copies in the game's first 7 weeks.
Ooh, that is I love that.
Yeah.
Everybody was so concerned that that game was just going to be this tiny little homage to Miles and it wouldn't matter and it wouldn't be significant. But from everything that I've heard, everybody loved that
game. It's great. I loved it.
Everybody loved it.
It's very cool. The last piece of news actually popped up outside of their earnings report.
Okay.
Sony, in partnership with Cygames owner Cyber Corporation, has made an investment in Kadokawa Corporation. Now, you might not know Kadokawa Corporation.
Not off the top of my head.
They own From Software and have since 2014. The deal gives Sony and Cyber Corporation each a 1.93% minority stake in Kadokawa. And again, this is such a small
investment. It's very small.
It does not create any obligation for From Software games to appear exclusively on Sony consoles.
No panic.
So remember, Sekiro was published by Activision. So that appeared everywhere. Bloodborne and Demon's Souls were published. Well, yes. Demon's Souls and Bloodborne were published by Sony. We're punishing games, and I hate them because I feel so dumb when I play them. I should play more Demon's Souls.
You don't hate either of them. I don't. You love either. Bloodborne.
I love Bloodborne so
You love
much.
Bloodborne so very much. So knock it off. You don't hate them. They are punishing games, but you do not hate them. Either that or you just really enjoy being hurt.
So this has been an episode of Virtual Economy.
You know what that's going to lead us into?
A break?
That's the one.
That's right.
Virtual Economy is an F-Squared initiative. And along with pro bono business consulting for up-and-coming developers, it's a way we are working to give back to the community that has already given us so much. To find out more about F-Squared and the services we can provide, including pitch prep, media training, mock reviews, and business strategy guidance, visit our website at fsquared.biz. And we're back. We are coming back from the break with Unity.
Yes.
So we're going to be talking about Q4 and fiscal year 2020 earnings.
Now remember, Unity went public last year.
They did.
And the IPO was intended to start backfilling some of the losses that the company has been incurring over the year. Now, it's not uncommon for a startup with intent to go public to make lots of big investments using investor
Smart
money.
Smart investments through mergers and acquisitions.
And then go public and start to turn things around.
Yes.
Now, not every company that IPOs is in the red, but it's not uncommon.
No, but it is not uncommon. So, you know, with those expectations in mind, let's go through some of the numbers. So Unity's Q4 revenue was $220.3 million US, which is up 39% year over year. Mm-hmm. That's incredible. I really hope that we're going to see lots of cool, fun indie games as a result of that.
Yes.
Full year revenue was at $772.4 million, which, again, that's not a slouchy revenue year.
No, and they're expecting that that's going to go up even higher in 2021, and the revenue will be $950 to $970 million for the year. So they are going to be knocking on the door of $1 billion in revenue, probably.
By 2022. I would imagine so. But here's something that's really, really interesting. They still ran a loss. They
in
ran
Q4.
For
and
Q4.
Then the four. But yeah, like.
But they're still running at a loss. Yes. So they ran at a loss in Q4 of $80.8 million, which is like, okay, that happens. And the loss for fiscal year 2020 is sitting pretty at $274.8 million, which is, I mean, that's a lot worse than what their losses looked like in 2019, which was $150.7 million.
Right. And it's not like things are going to get a whole lot better in 2021. They're still anticipating losses between $90 million and $105 million. Now, that starts going in the right direction by a lot. But at this rate, they might not be showing, they might not be showing a profit until 2022, 2023.
That would not surprise me, considering that they are running in the hundreds of millions in losses. Mm-hmm. However, it is a beloved platform, and people, like developers everywhere, love using Unity. It tends to be like the toast of indie development.
Yes. So they do expect that their revenue growth is going to be 30% over the long run. Again, we're starting to see that with their expectations for 2021. COVID was actually a boost for their revenue by about $25 million, they said. So 3% of their 2020 revenue. And the reason for that, and they mentioned this specifically, Unity Forma, which is a version of Unity or a package of Unity that's designed for 3D virtual showrooms and e-commerce. Mm-hmm. So Volkswagen's already on board. Walgreens is already on board. So we've got a variety of different type of manufacturers, or retailers, rather.
Including, like, luxury labels, mm-hmm. which is amazing. I'd love to see more about which luxury labels are picking that up, but I'd have to assume that anything, like, I would love, in fact, if I'm going to put this out there, I'd love to see fashion shows mm-hmm. entirely digitally and virtually. Not to say that I wouldn't want the models to be involved or whatever, or the actual clothing themselves not to be shown off, but wouldn't that be interesting, especially while we are dealing with a global pandemic, to be able to have those fashion shows in a way that's sustainable and accessible to more people than just the handful of, you know, fashion journalists mm-hmm. that live in New York City?
Yeah, there's also aeronautics customers that are working with Unity Forma and a major hospitality chain.
Okay.
So that's interesting. So the IPO, looking at the numbers, brought in about $1 billion in cash assets.
That's really cool.
And specifically, Mark Whitten was mentioned in the call. Now, right. He was one of the fathers of Xbox Live, as it were.
Yep.
He worked under, what's his name, for the Xbox One guy, Don Mattrick. He worked under Don Mattrick. Man. And but Mark I've interviewed a couple times, is a good guy. And Peter Moore, as we talked about in a previous show, Peter Moore is now working at Unity, and for his old boss John Riccitiello.
Yeah.
And we'll be working on esports type stuff.
That'll be interesting to see.
Sports and esports.
Yeah, sports and esports stuff. That'll be really interesting
to
see.
So because Unity just went public, we're just keeping an eye on it to understand where things are. Obviously, mm-hmm. you know, Epic being the other major player.
Yep, with Unreal Engine.
We think they're doing pretty well, given all that Fortnite money. Not to mention, like, Mandalorian money and all that.
Yeah, there's a lot of money. A lot of money in the Unreals. Yep. All right, let's talk about Electronic Arts. It's EA time.
It's EA time.
It's in the game.
And there were a lot of games we have to talk about.
Yeah, this one's a chunky
monkey. This one's a chunky monkey. Just like, you know, Nintendo is quite chunky as well. So let's talk about Q3 earnings. So for Q3, net revenue was up 5% to $1.67 billion US, but about $2 million shy of guidance, which is, I mean, this is like funny money.
Yeah.
So,
I mean, I would like to be off by $2 million in the other direction. That would not be negligible for me.
Please. Please give us the $2 million that you are shy of guidance.
That's right.
Thank you so much.
We don't have a Patreon, but if we did, we'll create a $2 million just for you, who's listening. You know who you are.
You know who you are. Oh, goodness. All right. So full game and live service revenue are both up. So 60% sold through digital, which is up from 49% from the year before.
Ultimate Team and Apex Legends drove their live service revenue. And mobile has grown year over year for three consecutive quarters.
That's great.
Sorry, it has grown year over year for three consecutive quarters. So that's Q3, Q2, and Q1 of this current fiscal year. They specifically mentioned Star Wars Galaxy of Heroes and FIFA Mobile.
Right on. Apex is doing really great. So Apex has new players and has grown 30% year over year. And it's coming out on the Switch.
In this fiscal year.
So that'll be really great too. I've been seeing a lot of love for Apex lately. I guess the new meta must be really fun. All the new content must be great. The game has changed so much since you and I first looked at it.
I know. I've rated at the end of my stream another member of our team, Island Style, and he plays a lot of Apex. So
JD does too.
Yeah, I'll hang around and I'll just watch for a little bit because I would be terrible.
No, we're both garbage at those kinds of games, and it's okay. I'm better to play, you know, strategy games. Mm-hmm. Sometimes I do the shooty, shooty, bang, bangs, but only with Halos.
So for the quarter, EA's net income was down 39% to $211 million. They expect to record a $19 million loss for the fourth quarter due to a $152 million change in tax accounting. Again, that's one of those extraordinary things where it's not like, hey, our performance is worse, but tax accounting has changed, and therefore, at some point, we need to reconcile all this.
Yeah, absolutely. And I would imagine that tax accounting has changed in both countries that EA operates in both Canada and the United States. Yes. So, looking at the trailing 12 months, net bookings are up 8% year over year to $5.96 billion, which is impressive.
Yep. Now we get to talk about the really interesting stuff, the engagement type stuff.
Hooray, engagement!
So EA Sports engagement.
It's in the game.
230 million players over the past fiscal year. That includes the fact that the Pro Bowl was hosted in Madden instead of Hawaii because, you know, COVID.
That old chestnut.
And FIFA Ultimate Team had 6 million daily active users.
Active users was sitting at 6 million people? Yeah. Holy mollies.
Yeah.
All right, we just finished talking about Apex's growth, but that 30% year over year is just impressive. Sims 4 mm-hmm. hit some amazing records as well, broke records for daily active, weekly active, and monthly active users in December, now has more than 33 million players. I personally feel very good about this.
Absolutely.
I wish I had more time to spend in The Sims. I wish I had more time to just play video games in general.
Mm-hmm.
But man, Sims 4 really hitting its stride.
EA, as we mentioned, had its own stock. It has its own stock repurchasing plan in place. They repurchased,
not nearly as ambitious as Activision Blizzard.
2.5 million shares repurchased for $326 million in this quarter. And over the last 12 months, EA has repurchased 5.9 million shares for $695 million.
All right. So this one is really interesting, Mike. Mm-hmm. Why do you think that we'll get to it. I'll ask you the question after I'm done saying like what it is. So this is something that should have been like absolutely shouted from the rooftops, but somehow has been buried and no one has really talked about it. So EA Play now has 13 million players.
Absolutely. And there's no doubt to me that, especially because we know the mechanics of it, that the Xbox Game Pass Ultimate subscription, which now includes EA Play on console, I still don't think it's come over to PC yet.
I don't believe so. No, I think we're still waiting.
Yeah, it still hasn't. But on console, you get an entitlement for EA Play. And the way that works is that you're getting an EA Play subscription. So it's not just it's lumped in with Game Pass. The EA gets to count that as one of their subscriptions.
Mm-hmm.
So you're getting essentially a token that says you also get this subscription. Not it's part of it. You get it with it. But it is its own distinct thing that
exactly.
we're giving you access to. So it's another door you're walking through, essentially.
Absolutely. So then the cool thing about this, though, is that the data about the user interaction with subs is that EA is finally getting the lift and the acknowledgement that it deserves with EA Play. It's a great deal.
Mm-hmm.
Like, Xbox Game Pass, we're going to talk about this until the end of time. Brilliant, brilliant stuff. And EA Play being added in there is just mm-hmm. brilliant.
Now, something that I think is really interesting, when you talk about a subscription program and you talk about a company as large as EA,
mm-hmm.
we talked about this a bit with Google, and I don't mean to say that EA is like Google at all, because EA obviously gets games.
Really?
But Google, we've talked about how everything is very siloed, and you've got multiple people, A, looking out for their own interests within the company.
Yep.
And B, you've got people who simply don't talk to or are aware of other big projects that are going on in the company. Now, my understanding is that, you know, you've got game teams at EA, you've got the subscription team at EA, and I imagine that if I am a traditional player in games, a traditional executive or traditional lead on a team, I am worried about how my game is going to sell to make sure that my team doesn't get disbanded.
Yep.
My team gets to make the next game in the series.
Yep.
And there is this old philosophy that I think is starting to get eroded in the game industry among consumers, among executives, that subscriptions erode revenue, that subscriptions erode the player base and make it harder to justify the green light of a sequel, for instance.
Yeah, so the money and the numbers say that's not the case.
And the beauty of subscriptions, as you've reported on, as I've reported on, more people are playing more different games because money isn't the barrier. Time becomes the resource, not
time becomes
the
resource.
Pivotal resource.
Yeah, absolutely. And like I just talked about, I wish I had more time in the day to play more video games, quite frankly, or more board games, or just like, no, just games in general, let's be real.
Yeah. So but people are playing more games. They're playing games longer.
They are.
And they're exploring those genres more.
There is demonstrable statistics that show that I believe it's in the 30% range. Mm-hmm. That like 30% of players sitting in these subscriptions are comfortable going off and trying games that they never would have tried before. And that's, yeah, I think that's partly self-reporting. So, I mean, like, listen, if you're playing FIFA and you're looking at this and you're like, oh, I've never seen Unravel before. This looks really cute. Mm-hmm. Maybe I'll give this a shot. It's a small game. It's not a big time investment. And then you fall in love with it. And then you're like, I want more games like this.
Look, there's Unravel 2.
Yeah, exactly. So yeah, it's good stuff. pretty happy about that. You know what else I'm kind of happy about?
Oh, what are you happy about?
I'm happy about Codemasters.
Ah, yes.
So the Codemasters shareholders have approved the acquisition. EA says that it wants to release new racing games every year. And just to remind you, mm-hmm. Codemasters makes F1, Dirt, and Grit.
And EA already makes Need for Speed. So
yeah, I wish they'd make more Need for Speed. I love those games.
Yeah. So there's EA is suddenly a major player in the racing world. There's only one game that's currently slated for EA in Q4, and that is It Takes Two, the next game from Joseph Farris and Hazelight. That's the couple. It's like the love story.
That's the cute love story.
It's the marriage, I guess. And there's a little friction there, and suddenly they have to work together. And
yeah, we'll be playing that one on stream.
All right. We'll be playing that one on stream.
You heard it here first. Battlefield is going to be returning for this holiday season, which is going to be awesome.
Mm-hmm. It'll be interesting to see how that runs on the new consoles.
Absolutely. And Mass Effect Legendary is coming on May 14th. Clear your calendars. It's time.
It's my favorite remake on the Citadel.
That's good.
Why, thank you.
I like that. All right, you talk about this. Right. I don't care about this.
So, way back in 2013, you may recall that NCAA football, EA's long-running college football series, was canned. And the reason why is because there were a number of lawsuits going on with former college players suing the NCAA and EA because they got nothing. Because the NCAA prohibits student athletes from making money off of their names and their appearances. So the way the college football games worked, it was real teams. I'm going to say kind of real players because it had their numbers, but it wouldn't have the roster. So you could go in and you could look up the college's roster and you could just input. Or there was a time where you could download, I think. There were ways that you could share rosters through those games and just download somebody who had already done, like, all of the name entry for all of the schools.
That's really fascinating.
So, when it went away, we're like, it's done. It's never coming back because sure. The settlements were big. So, the player likeness lawsuits ended the franchise. The last entry was released in July 2013. EA, the collegiate licensing company, and the NCAA settled a class action suit for $60 million, and each player got an average of $1,600. There were nearly 25,000 players involved. The EA and the collegiate licensing company are monitoring the situation, and the new game is not coming out this year. It's early in dev. It's not called NCAA football. It's just called college football. So real schools, no real players, no NCAA branding. Polygon has a great story about Owen Good, who is one of the few people in our sphere who I would trust to really do this story justice, another one being Sumit Sarkar. Both of them over at Polygon. So I read Owen's story, and Owen was talking about how on January 11th, the NCAA announced that it would delay its members' vote on a proposal to let college athletes, quote, benefit from their name, image, and likeness. This would allow, for example, football players to be paid for endorsements, autographs, and appearances at private camps and clinics, and theoretically for appearances in video games.
So, okay, can I ask a question?
Sure.
As somebody who does not have any interest in American football, mm-hmm. but is interested in the differences between college football and the NFL. Like, mm-hmm. what's the difference? And why do people want a college football game and Madden? Like, why does it matter?
Well, I think it's the difference between college basketball and the NBA in that...
But we don't have a college basketball game.
We used to.
Okay, but hear me out. What's the difference?
So there's the pageantry of college football and college basketball. There's the pep bands in the stands. There's the marching band stuff.
Marching
bands got a lot of play in it. It's just, listen. There are pep bands. There's the school fight songs. There's the fact that, hey, you went to this school. You attended their football games.
So this
games.
Is for Americans, is what you're saying.
This is college, for Americans.
The college football thing, the college basketball thing, you all are very stuck on where you all went to school.
Absolutely.
You've never heard of where I've gone to school, though. Before I met you. No one knew. That's fine. You don't have to know where I went to school.
Yeah. So I think this is really interesting. I'm very curious about how they're navigating this. I trust that EA... legal would not allow this to exist if they weren't really confident about not getting their butt sued again.
Yeah.
So I'm really excited about this from a mechanical perspective. It's not a game I'm going to play, but from a mechanical perspective, because I reported on some of this back when I was at Game Informer, very, very interested. But read Owen Good's story over at Polygon. I did drop that link into the show notes.
Okay. No more about football.
No more about football.
No more about football. It's time for Star Wars. Let's talk about how EA is still full steam ahead with Star Wars games, even without exclusivity. Mm-hmm. So Star Wars The Old Republic, Galaxy of Heroes, Battlefront, Jedi Fallen Order, $3 billion life-to-date net bookings, and 52 million units sold.
Galaxy of Heroes has brought in $1 billion alone.
Woo! Damn!
I know somebody. Who will remain nameless because I love him and I'm not gonna shine a light on his addiction. Has spent so much freaking money in Galaxy of Heroes.
He is the whale of whales.
He is the whale of whales.
The daddy whale.
He is the daddy whale.
He's still the daddy whale.
All right, so we're not talking about football anymore, but I do want to bring up basketball one more time. Because EA's got soccer with FIFA. They've got hockey with NHL. They've got football with Madden, and then soon again, at some point in the near future, college football. Uh-huh. They don't have baseball. We talked about that last week, yesterday. When did we, was it yesterday?
Yesterday, we talked about how Sony.
Time is a flat circle.
We talked about how Sony is going to be bringing MLB The Show to Xbox.
Right. So, EA had basketball. It had NBA Live for a while, and the last entries have just been miserable.
Don't
They've
been care.
Just wrecked by 2K.
Don't, well, okay, yeah. I mean, 2K has genuinely cornered the market on that. But here's the deal. Unless it's NBA Jam, get out of here.
Yeah. So the, not so EA is not, they're still committed to basketball, but I think they're not going to move unless they are sure they can compete with NBA 2K.
They have to do something that's way different than what NBA 2K is doing, quite frankly, because NBA 2K is a sim, right?
It is. And here's the thing. People want a sim from the people who made Madden and NHL and FIFA.
But hear me out, NBA Jam. Just make NBA Jam, folks. It'll sell like gangbusters.
Or NBA Street was good.
NBA Street was also
and
really good.
And that was
good.
EA Big, right?
Yeah, I believe so. Yeah.
Back when they used to EA Big.
EA Big.
Last thing, BioWare has had its share of challenges.
Oh, yeah. A number
so,
of them.
So, you know, we have Andromeda was a problem. Anthem was a challenge.
Is it coming back? Have we heard?
I hope so. I think that probably got a little slowed due to COVID as well. I think people are worried because of the departures around Dragon Age.
That's right. Yeah, there were some troubling... There have been some troubling developments coming out of BioWare, not the least of which include crunch culture and, quite frankly, a... The whole BioWare magic thing. While I agree that BioWare has made some truly magical gaming experiences, y'all just have your design documents. Like, stop relying on magic. It's like, only... Magic is only so good if you ship the damn game.
But despite all of its challenges, Andrew Wilson has expressed confidence in and support for BioWare.
Of course.
So
he has.
I'm excited. I'm really excited to play Mass Effect Legendary.
Oh, that's going to be so great.
I'm excited to finally play this little game called Dragon Age Inquisition, which I've started 3 times and have not.
I have fully played that game through 3 times with a fourth playthrough in
should
progress.
I play it on the couch? Should I play it on, because I think I have the full version on PS4, so I could play it on PS5, or should I play it on my PC?
I don't know. It depends on whether or not you want me there heckling you.
I do want you there heckling me. It's the best thing about playing games. Like heckle me, daddy.
My name's Daddy. Sweet. You know what else is looking daddy as F? Nintendo's earnings.
Our last one for the day.
Our last one. Holy smokes. This is gonna be a long episode again. Darn it! Every time that I look over and
listen
I look
to us
at
on 1.5 speed.
Yeah, it's fine. I'm going to sound like a chipmunk, but it doesn't matter. All right. You know we're tired when the squeaky laughs come out. Oh, no. Okay, let's talk about Nintendo's earnings. So it was another big quarter for Nintendo, unsurprisingly. And they have released their year-to-date financials for the 9 months trailing. Mm-hmm. They haven't specifically talked about their quarter.
When I was a Game Informer, I used to do the math so that I could report on the quarter. It's just
no, it's not worth it. 9 months trailing. That's what we're going to talk about. So any time that you hear me talking specifically about big numbers, and we're in the billions, the trillions of yen at this point, I do not want you to worry.
These are big numbers.
These are big numbers.
They're very big numbers, and they're for 9 months trailing. I have no idea what you're doing in my document right now. That's very upsetting.
Don't pay attention.
I don't pay no attention to the man behind the curtain. So, net sales were up 37.3% from 1.2 trillion yen. 1.02 trillion yen, rather. Which translates to $9.68 billion US to 1.4 trillion yen, translating to $13.3 billion US.
So many sales.
There are so many sales, and they were up. And this is like compared to the same time period in their previous financial year, previous fiscal year. So net profit is up. Wait for it. This isn't eightfold, but it is 91.8%. It's just banana
Nintendo
pants.
Nintendo has just been like stomping across the game industry for the past 9 months.
They it's don't the funniest care. Thing.
They're like,
they don't care.
We are making so much money and you cannot stop us. Thank you for helping us make so much money.
Thank you for all of your monies, possibly for all of the Nintendo Switches. All right. So anyway, so net profit is up 91.8%. From 196.3 billion yen, so about $1.86 billion US, to 376.6 billion yen,
which is $3.58 billion in profit.
That's profit.
That's profit.
That is pure.
Step one, steal underpants. Profit. Step two,
become
step
Nintendo.
Three, profit. Now we know what step two is.
Step two is become Nintendo. All right, now that we've determined what step two is. So, video games, including hardware, software, and accessory, made up the bulk of Nintendo's earnings. So, that was like about 96% of it. You remember how we were talking about how Nintendo was really different from places like Capcom?
So, and is the last 4% then like the Nintendo Online subs?
So, the last 4% is mobile and their IP and royalties.
Oh, sure. Sure, of
And including their amusement park that they're in
Got
the
it.
Midst of creating.
Makes sense.
So, of those sales, 54% of it was for hardware, which is down 1.6% from the same period last year. Okay. So, slightly depressed, but still eating everyone's lunch.
But also in the same quarter that the PlayStation 5 and the Xbox Series consoles came.
Remember that this is the 9 months trailing. So, that's 54% 9 months trailing. And 40.9% was dedicated to digital sales. This is the biggie, Mike. This is the biggie. Digital sales were up from 28.6% to 40.9% compared to the same time frame last year. And in addition, according to Nintendo, 81.6% of their software sales were for first-party games.
That's wild.
That's...
I mean, the strength of Nintendo's first-party portfolio, they have not released a stinker on the Switch.
Well, I mean... The 3D All-Stars was not
great, but people bought it because of the time limited thing.
But we'll get there. If
any game was slightly weak on the Switch, ARMS maybe.
Yeah, that's fair. But ARMS was also like it was not a launch title, but it was in the launch window. Yeah. All right, so let's talk about the breakdown here. So the Americas comprised the vast majority of sales for Nintendo at 41.1%. Europe had 25.6%, Japan 22.4%, and the rest of the world, which includes the Middle East and Northern Africa, in addition to China, as we have learned, as we will learn rather, they came in at 10.9%.
Okay. Looks like they're unexpectedly raising their forecast for fiscal 2021.
I believe they have raised their forecast for every quarter.
And it's such a stark difference, because I reported on the Wii U and just how badly that battered Nintendo. So they're raising it from 1.4 trillion yen, which is about 13.3 billion US, to 1.6 trillion yen, which is $15.2 billion. That's net sales. That's so many bells for Tom
Nook. That's so many bells for Tom Nook. And the forecast is still set quite a bit higher than their fiscal 2020 actual net sales at 1.3 trillion yen, which translates to $12.3 billion US.
They expect to sell even more Switches than they thought they were going to. So they're setting that at 26.5 million from 24 million. and they're raising the number of software units, holy crap, by 35 million units from 170 million to 205 million by the end of fiscal 2021, which is March 31.
Yeah, it's incredible. All right, so before we jump into the very juicy numbers, like, you know, why, what are the hottest games and why, why is it Animal Crossing and how many Switches Nintendo has sold, let's do a quick refresher on sell-in versus sell-through.
Okay.
So for software, we consider sell-in, so let's like sold to wholesalers who then sell to retailers. We consider the sell-in and sold-through, which is when the retailers sell to the customers, to have a gap between them. We discussed it yesterday in our episode, so, you know, it usually has some kind of a gap. Now, for hardware, on the other hand, especially during the pandemic and especially for Nintendo, sell-in and sell-through are almost even.
Yes. And the reason why that is because inventory costs on hardware is much higher.
It is.
Each unit costs significantly more. They take up more space.
Yep.
So you don't want to order so many units that you're keeping them in warehouse. Whereas software, there are a lot of factors. And again, love to talk to have somebody come on the show to talk to us about decay curves and talk
Email
to us about
us.
What's the word? Reserve pricing.
Yes, reserve pricing is
would
the
love
big
to,
one.
Would love to talk about that stuff.
Absolutely. So with that in mind, Nintendo has sold in 24.1 million units. Sold in?
Yes.
Sold in, yes, over the trailing 9 months, an increase of 35.8% compared to the same period last year. Of these units sold, 16.7 million of them were just, you know, the regular average Switches, and 7.33 million were Switch Lites.
Now, just to compare this, they have already for 9 months sold in 24.1 million units. Their original expectation at the start of when they were setting their guidance at the end of last fiscal year was 24. So yeah. they've already beaten it. It's not like we think we're gonna beat it, we're gonna go further. They've already beaten it.
So after this holiday season, cumulative global sell-through for the Nintendo Switch is estimated to have surpassed, wait for it, 74 million units as of the last week of December 2020.
That's wild. Best-selling game right now.
What do you think it is?
Oh, I looked at the show notes.
Oh.
It would be cheating.
Okay, but what is it then?
It's Animal Crossing.
It is definitely
Animal
Crossing. It is
absolutely Animal Crossing.
Yeah, absolutely. So people have purchased 19.41 million copies of Animal Crossing New Horizons. And according to Matt Piscatella, who is a game analyst at NPD Group and friend of the show, the attach rate for New Horizons is sitting pretty at 39%.
And that's really interesting because prior to this, if you had the conventional wisdom prior to Animal Crossing New Horizons, is that Mario Kart is going to be the top-selling Nintendo game.
Yes.
That game sells and sells and sells and sells. And people, especially now that people have multiple Switches in their house, are buying multiple copies of Mario Kart because everybody wants the Mario Kart. Right?
Yeah, let's go.
It's sitting at number two at 8.64 million copies.
It really is. But remember how I said something about Super Mario 3D All-Stars?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, FOMO worked.
Yeah.
That FOMO marketing definitely worked. They ended up, they're sitting at number three with 8.32 million copies sold. And Ring Fit is sitting in fourth place, having sold 5.95 million copies.
Very nice. Very nice. Now, let me ask, is this all time or is this in this quarter?
No, this is all time.
Okay.
Yeah, this is absolutely all time. Overall, the total software sell-through for Nintendo's games has increased 28% compared to the same period last year, from 56.59 million units sold to 72.94 million units sold. Again, this is as of the last week of December 2020.
Yeah, digital sales also going bananas. Grew 104% compared to the same period last year. So that's the first 9 months.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. It's it's so much. Let's talk about mobile. So mobile and other projects are still doing relatively well for Nintendo as well, bringing in 42 billion yen. So about $398.8 million US, which is up 13.8% compared to the same period last year. So that includes Pocket Camp?
Yes.
Yeah.
Animal Crossing Pocket Camp. It's going to be the Mario Kart game.
Yeah.
It's going to be Dr. Mario
And it's going to also pertain to royalties that mm-hmm. they are getting. And that's also in addition to their amusement park stuff. Mm-hmm.
Now, we have a treat because...
This never happens.
So, Nintendo, when they have their earnings call, they open the floor to shareholders to ask questions. Typically, it takes them a week, 2 weeks to translate those. And they did it in a matter of days this time. So, we actually have some interesting stuff that popped up here. Now, some of these... I will tell you that it used to be a joke around those of us who... For those of us who covered this stuff, because some of these questions are absolutely terrible.
They're usually absurd.
This is not like when you're listening to an EA or an Activision earnings call and you have engaged and on top of things investors who are asking questions.
Well, these are also investors that are coming from banks and investment firms.
Right.
And...
They're brokers. They're people. Yeah. These are people who manage funds for people and who are supposed to be experts in the industry anyway. When we see these questions from Nintendo, sometimes they're coming from people who really have no idea what Nintendo does.
Yeah.
For instance, one question a number of years ago was, why don't you give free games to your investors?
So that's fun.
Yes.
Better questions, though, are the two questions that I pulled out. Now, there were a number of repeated questions in the shareholders Q&A, but... Mm. These were a couple of really good ones. So, Mike, what was the first question that was asked?
Okay. How will Nintendo continue to increase its sales with the Switch as it approaches Wii sell-through figures? And Shuntaro Furukawa, who is the representative director and president of Nintendo, answered as such. Our research has found that approximately 20% of the Nintendo Switch family sell-through between October and December 2020 in the main regions was due to demand for multiple systems within the same family. We will aim to continue increasing our sales volume by rigorously responding to this kind of demand for multiple systems as well. Now, here is what this says to me. This should serve as confidence for Nintendo releasing a Switch Pro unit.
Yup.
If it's the same way as a 3DS, new 3DS system was, where most, if not all, of the software library is playable on the original units... This to me says, hey, you know that people are now buying multiple Switch units. They are at the point where I'm going to get a second Switch for my kids so we can play together. Or so they stop bogarting my Switch.
Or so they stop invading my Animal Crossing island.
Exactly. Well, and given the number of copies of Animal Crossing sold, absolutely.
Yeah, I would imagine.
So to me, this is a good signal that Nintendo could get away with a Switch Pro in the near term, sometime in 2021. I still would love to see that happen, and I think that would be important because the power gap has now grown between PlayStation 5, Xbox Series X, and Switch, so those Switch ports are going to struggle in a way that is gonna make it tough. It's gonna be a tougher sell.
We've already seen that, and we've seen that with a number of fairly powerful ports that didn't quite do as well on the Switch as they could have, considering the power gap.
I mean, not everything is Switcher 3. But that's the magic of Saber. Was it, who did that?
I don't remember was who Saber? Did Switcher. Saber might have done that. I'm not sure. So let's talk about the second question that we had coming, or that Nintendo had coming in. So one investor wanted to know, what the heck is going on in China? How is the Switch selling? What are you doing? Can you tell us how things are going? Mm-hmm. So this is what Furukawa had to say. Tencent recently confirmed that it had shipped 1 million units in the Chinese market, so 1 million Switches in the Chinese market, between the December 2019 launch and the end of 2020. We do not discuss our sales expectations in China, but we have seen hardware sales steadily increase as more titles become available. Thank you, Department of Propaganda. Specifically to this point, we have heard from Tencent that many consumers have purchased a console together with Ring Fit Adventure since its release last September. So that seems to be where a lot of the Ring Fit sales are coming from. Not to say that that isn't happening over here in the United States and pretty much everywhere else, because Ring Fit is an excellent game. It's an excellent fitness game, and everybody wants a good fitness game in the midst of a pandemic.
Absolutely.
So something to note is that China's sales are, as I said earlier, they are counted in the other category when Nintendo reports on its sales figures. All right, so let's talk about some of the bigger titles that are going to be
coming out. Okay, it's going to be a huge few months for the Switch.
It is going to be it's going to be really, really big.
Starting next week.
So Monster Hunter Rise.
Well, next week is Super Mario 3D World.
Okay, we're getting there.
Okay.
I'm not talking about release dates. I'm talking about how big things are going to get.
Okay.
So we've got Monster Hunter Rise, which is going to sell so much.
Oh yeah, I got all my Amiibo pre-ordered. I got the collector's edition pre-ordered.
Pokemon Snap, new Pokemon Snap, which is for people like me that have been begging Nintendo to do something with Pokemon Snap since, you know, the GameCube, because we all played it on the Nintendo 64 and we're like, where's Pokemon Snap, y'all? Mm. Bravely Default 2 for the Switch. And as Mike had just said, Super Mario 3D World is coming out next week. So there are some chances for some big games, even in the upcoming fiscal year.
This is going to be my pump up for 3D World. I thought that game was excellent. I'm so glad it's making it over from the Wii U. Bowser's Fury looks so interesting. I'm very excited for it.
That's great. I didn't play either of those games. So.
Well, Bowser's Fury is brand new.
Okay, so I haven't played Super Mario 3D World because I didn't have a Wii U.
You cute cat. Cat Mario.
Right, Cat Mario and Cat Peach. I'm so excited. Cat Peach is going to live on my desk. I'm very excited about that. Mm-hmm. So let's talk a little, like, just to close up about Nintendo. Mm-hmm. Remember how I said there was that 1.6% decrease for hardware over the trailing nine mm-hmm. months? So people are starting to have to choose between the two next-gen consoles and buying a Switch. This, like, I know that in our house, we love our Switches, mm-hmm. and life with the Switch is better.
Life is good, but it could be better.
Life is good, but it could be better, and the Switch makes it better. But in households that are having to make that decision between, okay, well, my kids are older, so they're teenagers, we're trying to decide between buying a new PlayStation, an Xbox, or a Nintendo Switch, what are they going to end up choosing?
I think that depends on personal preference and software.
It does, but it would probably, if you have teenagers, it is likely going to be...
probably going to be a PlayStation or an Xbox.
It's likely going to be a PlayStation or Xbox. Now, families with younger children are probably going to be leaning more towards the Switches, which is why we're seeing multiple Switches in one household, mm-hmm. which is great.
Yes.
But they are going to have to contend with that, and that power gap, like you just said, that's going to continue to be a problem.
And that will even out once the PlayStation 5 and Xbox Series consoles get further into their life cycle.
Yeah, absolutely.
But I do think Nintendo needs a refresh. Not that Nintendo has ever concerned itself on the first party side with high power, talking about selling software, where Nintendo has typically fallen down is that those third party games do not run as well. And it is going to get to the point where the portability of the Switch is not enough of a lure to make up for the fact that the games don't run terribly well.
Yeah, exactly. All right.
Yeah, that's it. We did it. We did it.
And we did it, and we're under an hour and a half.
It'll be even shorter after we fix some of the mistakes that we made that you folks didn't hear.
Yeah, because I'm a really great producer. Go me.
Yeah, you are.
All right.
So thank you for listening to this very special earnings episode of the Virtual Economy Podcast. This has been episode 69.
Nice.
You can follow us on Twitter at Virtual Econcast. I am at Footerish, FUTTERISH.
And I am at Amanda Farrow, and I still refuse to spell my name.
One day. You can subscribe to our RSS feed, though, at our brand new website, which is virtualeconcast.com. Amanda did some tinkering with it. It's even more feature-friendly now. You can also listen to us in a variety of places.
You can listen to us on Spotify, iHeartRadio, Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Stitcher, Pocket Casts. Oh, what's the other one that I'm thinking
of? What's this I have here? Oh, Pocket Sand!
Oh, right in the face. If it is your first time to the show, we are so sorry. No, I'm just kidding.
You came out at a great time. It's such a nice episode.
It's such a nice episode. We are children. We would love it if you had a great time with us, and I really hope that you did. I hope you enjoyed listening to this episode as much as we were aboard the struggle bus for this episode.
We were. It's these double weekends are tough, but we do it for the love.
We do it for the love.
Of numbers. Specifically one number. 69.
Yep, there it is. All right, so if you enjoyed listening to our podcast, we'd love it if you could subscribe and tell the algorithm gods that we are worth paying attention to. And if you enjoyed what you heard, we'd love it if you would review the show, send us nice words, let us know what you think. If you think there are ways that we can improve, if there are things that you'd like to hear, tell us. You can send us DMs with questions and comments. That's at Virtual Econcast, or you can send them to podcast@fsquared.biz.
And if you have stuff that's super secret and you don't want to do it through Twitter or through email, we both have Signal. You can DM us at Virtual Econcast, and we'll give you our Signal numbers so that we can talk confidentially.
And that's us.
Yeah.
That's us for this week.
And we'll be back next week. I think with two episodes, we'll probably have a much shorter earnings episode based on what I see on the calendar. But we'll be back with our regular news show on Saturday as well. Remember, in the meantime, wash your hands, stay hydrated, and be good to one another.
We'll see you soon.